Jackson, W266, DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Liberty Mutual Insurance.
I'm Christopher Cruz reporting from the Washington Bureau. Officials in California say heavy rains and flooding in the past few days have caused several deaths.
Governor Gavin Newsom says he knows people are weary.
People are fatigued about evacuation orders. They're just fatigued generally.
But please, he says, just hang on a little longer because more storms are on the way Monday. Mark Chouinard is at the National Weather Service.
It's going to move across much of the state, especially the central and southern part of the state, maybe 2 inches in some of the more favored areas.
CBS's Linda Kenyon. President Biden this morning declared disasters in Autauga and Dallas counties in Alabama. 6 people were killed in the central part of the state last week when tornadoes roared through. A tornado destroyed Darrell Littleton's home, but he actually feels lucky.
I thought I had it bad, you know, all the devastation, you know, but when the reports started coming in, they were telling me how many lives got lost, you know, that was just heart-wrenching.
Lawyers for President Biden have found more documents bearing classified markings in places they shouldn't be. More from CBS's Bo Erickson.
The admission of these latest documents comes after White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre insisted earlier on Thursday that the search for the classified documents was complete at the president's 2 homes in Delaware.
Heated words under oath from a former president.
Ex-President Trump's October testimony in a civil suit was recorded, and transcripts of parts of it have been made public. The case involves a long-ago rape allegation against Trump, whose response under oath includes denials, angry insults, and threats to sue both the woman who accuses him, One Time magazine columnist E. Jean Carroll, and her lawyer.
CBS's Tom Foti. A knife attack last week on an Indiana University student has other Asian American students at the school worried, says WTTV reporter Eric Graves.
Police arrested 56-year-old Billy Davis. Court docs show Davis told police she targeted the victim because Davis thought she was Chinese. She told police, quote, it would be one less person to blow up our country.
I immediately feel unsafe taking the bus.
Students Caitlin Wu and Jin Jo wrote letters to the injured student, letting her know they're behind her.
I'm so sorry what happened.
At least 68 people have been killed in a plane crash in central Nepal. 72 passengers and crew were on the plane, among them 15 foreigners. The BBC's Caroline Davies.
Images of clouds of black smoke and flames have been posted on social media, allegedly from the crash site. Nepal has some of the world's most remote and difficult runways, and weather conditions in the mountains can change suddenly.
Egyptian authorities say archaeologists have unearthed an ancient tomb in the southern city of Luxor, known for its treasures dating back to the pharaohs. This is CBS News.
Nobody should have to pay for one-size-fits-all insurance coverage. Liberty Mutual customizes your car and home insurance so you only pay for what you need. Liberty Mutual Insurance.
WAUK 540 AM. Franklin's Choice for News Talk Radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. The long-term effects of Wisconsin's redistricting process were apparent in the November elections. A nonpartisan good government group says voters who feel overlooked should not give up. Mike Moen reports.
Democratic Governor Tony Evers won re-election, but Republicans maintained strong control over the legislature. Jay Heck of the group Common Cause points out that Evers maintains his veto power, but he says Republicans still carry a lot of weight, partly because they keep redrawing the maps to their advantage.
There were more votes cast for Democratic candidates statewide than Republican, but the contrast with the legislative elections in the state is so sharp, it almost makes laughable the idea that we have a true representative democracy.
Researchers have said that over the past decade, Wisconsin has produced among the most gerrymandered voting district maps in the country. Heck says voters should look ahead to next year's state Supreme Court election with the hope a less politicized court could eventually revisit the issue. And there could be legislation floated again next year to develop an independent redistricting process. In the meantime, he says the current maps allow a smaller percentage of voters to decide who controls the legislature, leaving other voters behind in fair representation.
Urban areas in Wisconsin have suffered a decline in the shared revenue from the state, even though those people pay taxes.
Heck says that means less support for schools, roads, and other public needs. Analysts say lawmakers representing these areas get packed into boundaries that ultimately diminish their voices at the state capitol. Mike Moen, Wisconsin News Connection. Support for this reporting was provided by the Carnegie Corporation of New York.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell.
It's a new year, and because we're excited about our new and still growing Civic Media network of radio stations, it's time to do something really big. How does a $1 million advertising giveaway sound to you? Our celebration is your chance to work with Civic Media's amazing sales team, creating a radio advertising campaign promoting your business for free. Save the date. The $1 million advertising giveaway is only happening on Thursday, January 26th. Full details on our website, civicmedia.us/million.
The Shaw 101 FM, New Berlin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com. You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media. To learn more, go to our website, civicmedia.us.
To escape, ultimately. In the wake of that, she also published some additional information about that, prompting the president, while he is the president in the White House, not only to deny that this ever happened again back in the 1990s, but also saying some fairly scurrilous things about E. Jean Carroll herself, her physical appearance, saying he doesn't know this woman, denying any allegations, and also saying things like, look at her, she's not my type, things that that we would not expect of any president, regardless of allegations made with foundation or not. That prompts E. Jean Carroll, that is these statements that the president, the former president, makes while he's in the White House, to sue him for defamation, basically saying that when you said publicly that I lied about this event back in the 1990s, you're defaming me. You're suggesting to the world that I am lying. And as a result of all sorts of machinations that get into the application of something called the Federal Tort Claims Act and the scope of responsibility for actors in the federal system,
hey, including this is Matt from Design Card,
the president of the United States of America. As a result of all of that, E. Jean Carroll has a lawsuit that, again, pending first in the New York State Court, ultimately removed to the federal court. Again, based upon this attempt by the former administration to substitute the United States of America for Donald Trump. Following all of that has to do with civil procedure, civil practice, and the federal law. The upshot of that is that inside that federal case, now pending in federal court, again, partially on appeal to the appeals court on this issue of substitution, while that's going on, the district court judge, the trial judge, says, you know what? I'm going to permit discovery to proceed. I'm going to permit the discovery to include a deposition, an oral deposition of the former president. And that happened on October 19th of this past year. At the time, you may recall, we chatted a little bit about that happening. We didn't have a transcript. This past week, the transcript of that deposition in that initial defamation case was released over the objection of the former president's lawyers, over the objection of Donald Trump, released by the district court judge, and among other things, again, the former president repeats in that deposition, we know it was October 19th, took about 5.5 hours, took place at the former president's Palm Beach residence. He once again denies knowing anything about her. Along the way, says things like, I know nothing about this nut job. Those words from the former president in the deposition of October 19th, goes on to say that, of course, from his view, consistent with his perspective, his statement of denying the allegations that this never happened, and along the way, takes account of the litigation itself. And in a long exchange with the attorney for E. Jean Carroll, who has this opportunity to ask him questions during the course of this deposition, the former president says, this is a false accusation. Never happened. Never would happen. I posted. I will continue to post as he did about 6 days or so before this deposition, denying this once again. He says, I'll continue to post until such time, and then I will sue when this is all over. And that's what I'm really looking forward to doing, the former president said. I'll sue you too, he says to the attorney, because this is how many cases do you have? he says, many, many cases. And I know that statements were made that you made. Keep Trump busy, because this is the way you defeat him, to keep him busy with litigation. So I will be suing you also. I'll be suing her very strongly as soon as this, but I'll be suing you too. Again, making reference to E. Jean Carroll and the attorney, a strong denial, which he has within his rights to do, but nonetheless taking on the attorney and promising more lawsuits in response to this lawsuit by her. The attorney named Kaplan responds to all that by saying, are you done? And the former president says, yeah, and goes on to say, is there anything in particular that prompted you to make this statement last week? Again, this posting about the continuing denial. And the president says, yeah, her false story, and that I have to waste a whole day doing these ridiculous, responding to these ridiculous questions with you. Again, that coming out of the unsealed, again, released document, this transcript of the deposition taken by E. Jean Carroll's attorney of Donald Trump back in October. That case still continues, of course, the release of that document, again, over the former president's objection. But it's also a part of a second piece of litigation that we've also talked about here on this broadcast. We know that in the wake of the filing of that lawsuit, and perhaps in part, but not entirely in response to that, New York passed a law. It's called the New York Adult Survivors Act. Basically, it revives any lawsuits of this type, alleging sexual assault, rape, other things like that, horrendous, heinous crimes like that, if in fact the statute of limitations has run. And plainly, this is an allegation about something that happened back in the 1990s, 27 years or so ago. Plainly, the statute of limitations has run. This New York Adult Survivors Act gives petitioners, gives plaintiffs like E. Jean Carroll and others the opportunity, a limited window, to bring new lawsuits, to bring new charges, to encourage criminal prosecution for these same events under this new law. And she has done just that. And that lawsuit is also pending out there, much related to the same fact pattern as we just described earlier, but nonetheless a parallel lawsuit. Needless to say, the former president's lawyers are attacking that, attacking the constitutionality of that New York law. We will continue to monitor all of those cases as they continue to go forward civilly and perhaps criminally as well in New York. We've got more. We've got more also focusing upon the former president. And this again goes back to Washington, D.C., goes back to the circle of advisors. I sit at the top of the two-hour program here this morning that we're going to talk about Rudy Giuliani, and indeed we are. We know well Rudolph Giuliani, former U.S. attorney in the Southern District of New York, former mayor, sometimes referred to as America's mayor in the wake of 9/11, came to the not only the description of what happened on September 11th, but also rallying, if you will, much of the country around the heroes of that day, the tragedy of that day. We also know, however, that in the wake of that, Rudy Giuliani has done an awful lot to destroy his reputation that was otherwise in fairly good shape, if not spectacular shape, in the wake of his service to the federal government, to the city of New York, and I would offer also to the people of the United States of America. Since that time, he has offered his own advice, his counsel, his direction to the now former president. He oversaw, for example, President Trump's legal challenges to the 2020 election, making persistent claims that the voting had been marred by widespread cheating, irregularities, a series of informal legislative hearings, you may recall, in key swing states around the country, going around the country saying that, in fact, the 2020 election had been stolen. Baseless conspiracy theories that a cabal of international actors had hacked into voting machines produced by a group called Dominion Voting Systems. They have turned around and sued Rudy Giuliani for those statements, also alleging defamation, all kinds of things that he has done, as you know well. Well, just this past week, we learned for the first time that back in November, the United States Attorney's Office in the District of Columbia served a subpoena, a grand jury, a criminal subpoena on Rudy Giuliani. And we know, of course, that this predates the appointment of Jack Smith, the special counsel for the January 6th matter, also the Mar-a-Lago matter. And so we know, again, that at some point in the not-too-distant past, Rudy Giuliani is also now the subject, if not the target, of the grand jury, the federal grand jury, summoning him there to provide testimony. The significance of that is that this is the first time that evidence has surfaced suggesting that Mr. Giuliani himself is directly embroiled in this inquiry into the part that Donald Trump played in the events leading up to January 6th. More particularly, it appears from reading some tea leaves here that as a part of this investigation, again being pursued by the Department of Justice through the U.S. Attorney's Office in the District of Columbia, that the special counsel's office is examining this group called the Save America PAC, among other things, the inner workings of Donald Trump's fundraising vehicle, the Save America PAC. The records subpoenaed from Mr. Giuliani could potentially include some related to payments made by that PAC, according to some people who have provided some information to some journalists out there. We know as well that some subpoenas issued in the past several months have asked for records concerning Save America. The House committee that investigated the January 6th matter also looked at that. And so, again, significant information that this continues to be the focus, a federal focus, a criminal focus, targeting documents that Mr. Giuliani has. We're going to talk more about that and other matters right after this break.
Hey, this is Matt from Design Garden. Remember when the internet was new? Back then you had to leave your house to start a business. Companies used to pay programmers bags of cash to get online. Now, small businesses can get online with a Facebook business page, or Squarespace, or Google My Business, or WordPress. But which tools should you use? Can you afford to go down the wrong path? Design Garden uses modern tools to build your website the right way. Find us online at design.garden. Again, that's design.garden.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
You've got questions about navigating the healthcare system? Kristen Lyerly helps us find answers and discusses other issues at the intersection of healthcare and politics. Hometown Health, Thursday mornings at 7:30 on Up North News Radio.
Fear you may be missing out? We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. Enjoy listening live or catch up by finding the podcast at civicmedia.us or wherever you enjoy listening to your podcasts.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Sunshine mixed with clouds at times this afternoon, with daytime highs approaching 33. Southwest winds 5 to 10 miles an hour. 27 tonight, mainly cloudy skies expected. Partly cloudy tomorrow, highs around 40. 44 Monday, with a chance for scattered rain showers. 41 Tuesday, chance for showers continues. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 21 degrees.
The Shop.
Women hear a lot about self-care these days. Advice on ways to relax, exercise, eat healthy, and more. Those are all great. But one of the most important self-care steps we can take is making sure we're financially secure later in life. That means saving money for retirement. It's never too late to start. And it's the kind of self-care that brings peace of mind that lasts. For small steps you can take to save for retirement, visit wesaysaveit.org. That's wesaysaveit.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
I was just curious as to why you called it the Paul Revere Show.
The Paul Revere Show is named this way because the poem that we all know, the famous ride, the poem was written to rally the troops to fight slavery and fight for democracy. And so I named the show the Paul Revere Show because I thought it was the time to get on the air and talk about democracy.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m., always on the Civic Media app.
To protect his family from disaster, Steve used his camera phone.
Done.
By taking pictures of his important documents, Steve can always have them stored online. Learn more simple disaster prep tips at ready.gov. A message from FEMA and the Ad Council.
You are listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Thank you. Did you know we are always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app too? And if you miss a show or game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Highs around 38 this afternoon. Under cloudy skies, southerly winds 10 to 15 miles an hour. Cloudy tonight. Chance for scattered showers. Lows dip down to about 34. Scattered rain showers again tomorrow. Highs around 42. Overcast skies. Upper 30s Tuesday and Wednesday with a chance for scattered showers Tuesday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 27 degrees.
A progressive voice from Beaver Dam to Kenosha. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
And we are back. And my name is Jim Santel. This is Morning Cannolis. We're talking once again about issues related to law, government, and justice in America. Right before the break, taking this very important phone call from Jake, who is commenting about this event, now described in the media, a six-year-old shooting his teacher, and commenting about the possibility of prosecution against parents for failing not only to keep guns in their home in a safe and a secure mechanism, a safe and secure situation, so their six-year-old, for example, does not get a hold of it. That has got to be a part of any rational response, not only to these kinds of events, but also to ensure that our Second Amendment rights, while they are established by the Constitution now, as interpreted by the Supreme Court, still ensure that we are safe and secure. Again, every major thoughtful advocate with respect to the Second Amendment understands and appreciates and embraces this notion that safety at the home, keeping guns out of the hands of children, is a key component of, again, many of these irrational and reasonable regulations that can be imposed. When that fails to happen, prosecutors should and do on a regular basis take a look at the responsibility of the adult for that behavior of their young person, their minor child. And so we'll look forward. We'll see what happens in that particular case. Again, very much appreciating the comment Jake made about that particular incident, having to do once again with the enforcement of the rule of law in America. We've taken another caller right now. Dick, so glad to have you with us this morning on Morning Cannolis, calling in from Madison. Thanks, Dick, for your comment or your question.
Well, I hate to say what I'm going to say, but I'm going to say it. I've thought a lot about January 6th and all of the rest that happened over the last couple of years, and I can't help but think that if the majority of those people would have been people of color, you would have seen much, much stronger sentences, much faster through the system, so to speak. And proof of it, I listened to Reverend Sharpton talking about just having to get a permit for a demonstration for Black Lives Matter and all the hoops they had to jump through. And yet this group with guns hanging out, sitting within blocks of the area in trees with weapons, and on and on and on it goes. But I'm sorry. The way the former guy, too, cleared the street early that year in June, just everything that went on is just...
Right, as he was going over to Lafayette Square, right, and clearing away the protesters. Once again, from my perspective, violating the First Amendment rights of people to protest and people to assemble. That's part of our Constitution, too. That, very offensive at the time. go beyond that, Dick, to your very good point here, that the incitement, again, a part of this overall plan, not only to undermine our election, but one does pause when one thinks about the response, if you will, to what happened on that day. If there had been people of color on that day who had been attacking our Capitol in a much greater population than they were, one cannot help but wonder if the response, frankly, not only politically, but even by law enforcement, may not have been different than it was. So very much appreciate your comment. We are going to look forward to further examination of those kinds of important issues. Dick, very much appreciate your observation about that. The frustration of the inequitable application of the rule of law in America, and that justice, although it is imperfect, is also the best justice system we have, also somewhat slow, as you indicated, Dick, in terms of getting all of this remedied and addressed. Let's talk about a couple of other things that are moving ahead, but also not with great speed. Again, in connection with the January 6th event, we know that the January 6th committee has subpoenaed many people, including among them Steve Bannon, the former senior advisor to the president. He has been convicted of 2 counts of contempt of Congress. We know that the January 6th committee also subpoenaed Mark Meadows, the former chief of staff. The United States Department of Justice has declined to prosecute him, based in part upon the fact that he did comply, at least in some part, with the request of the House committee for documents, and then kind of withdrew that support. Nonetheless, a declination there. But there's a third person out there, Peter Navarro. Peter Navarro, also a major senior advisor to the former president, also charged with contempt by the United States Department of Justice based upon a referral of the House committee. His trial was set to go back in November, but Judge Ahmed Mehta, we talked about him a little bit in the first hour this morning, was obliged to postpone that lawsuit, that prosecution against Peter Navarro for contempt of Congress from November until this coming week, January 11th. Peter Navarro undergoing trial now for contempt of Congress. He is the third person subject to a referral for contempt of Congress. Again, Steve Bannon previously charged and convicted. Mark Meadows declined. And now Peter Navarro going ahead in front of Judge Mehta and a jury that he will bring together on 2 counts of ignoring that subpoena based upon his involvement in the January 6th attack. And so, again, all of that related to January 6th, both directly and derivatively. We also have another caller calling in from Rock County. Rico, your comment or question this morning about any of the broad issues that we're discussing here on our broadcast.
Yeah, hey, Jim, I got a question for you. Maybe you could help me out with this. I was wondering, is there a mechanism, a legal route, or, you know, some kind of tool that we the people of Wisconsin have that would enable us, maybe through petition or something of that nature, to demand, and I'm speaking about Ron Johnson here, an investigation and, you know, if necessary, charges or what have you. But initially, the investigation, I'm just wondering, is there a route here? Is there something that we, the people, the voters that were almost disenfranchised, is there a legal route forward on this? And I'll take your answer off here. Thanks a lot.
Sure, Rico. And again, following up in part on a question that Joe asked in our first hour, thank you again for that. Again, this news breaking this past week, coming out of additional transcripts and reporting from the January 6th committee that our senior senator may have been involved in trying to influence the electoral votes through our state legislature. I'm going to chat more about Rico's good question and comment right after the break, and we're going to talk more about that in just a moment.
WAUK 540 AM, New Berlin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
CBS News Brief. California continues to be pounded by strong storms and flooding. Governor Gavin Newsom says the storms have claimed several lives in the state.
These weather events have taken more lives in the last 2 years than wildfires. That's how deadly these are.
The storms are expected to continue this week. Attorneys for President Biden have found more documents marked classified in the president's Delaware home. The discovery has created a growing political headache.
The first documents were discovered in November, but the White House did not go public about the issue until Monday, the same day CBS News broke the story, frustrating fellow Democrats.
CBS's Christina Ruffini. At least 68 people have been killed in a plane crash in central Nepal.
The Yeti Airlines flight from Kathmandu to the tourist town of Pokhara took off at 10:32 a.m. local time this morning. It crash-landed 1.5 kilometers from Pokhara Airport.
That's the BBC's Caroline Davies reporting from Delhi. CBS News Brief. I'm Linda Kenyon.
Are you dreading going into work every day? Do you want a career where you can earn more and feel appreciated? If you answered yes, then Sigma Castings, a division of Sigma Engineered Solutions in Marcus Ann and Jackson, is your answer. They are more than a company. They are a family of dedicated experts that span the continents. Here are a few ways they make you feel appreciated. Entry-level pay is $18 an hour with regular performance reviews. After 90 days, you get 80 hours of vacation plus 11 paid holidays. They will give you a $2,000 sign-on, stay-on bonus. They offer a robust benefit package with low premiums and great coverage, and their 401k will blow you away. Now hiring first shift, Monday through Friday, 5 a.m. till 2 p.m. Start your new career today at Sigma Castings in Markazan and Jackson. Find them on Indeed or call 920-260-8560 and wake up happy to go to work.
Women hear a lot about self-care these days. Advice on ways to relax, exercise, eat healthy, and more. Those are all great. But one of the most important self-care steps we can take is making sure we're financially secure later in life. That means saving money for retirement. It's never too late to start. And it's the kind of self-care that brings peace of mind that lasts. For small steps you can take to save for retirement, visit WeSaySaveIt.org. That's WeSaySaveIt.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
From the kennel to the coop, whatever the season, Fleet Farm has everything to keep your animals happy and healthy. From training your pup to sit season, to mastering those retrieval skills season. From clipping your horse for competition season, to keeping the backyard birds well-fed season. And of course, loving your pets like family season. There's a reason people say, if Fleet Farm doesn't have it, you don't need it. Because we have it all. Fleet Farm. Built for real life.
This local musical interlude is brought to you by Max Inc. Radio, VO5.
Let's do it on the dance floor. Let's do it while we can. Let's do it. Let's do it.
Listen to Max Inc. Radio every Saturday and Sunday, 6 p.m. to midnight. Download the podcast at maxincradio.com. We are local music.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media. Staying with me on this Saturday, January 14th, 2023, here on Morning Cannolis, we're talking about the Proud Boys trial resuming soon in a district court in Washington, D.C., and the significant, seemingly insignificant, but really significant evidentiary ruling by the presiding judge that the statement by, at that point, President Trump, candidate Trump, Proud Boys stand back and stand by, and the response given to him by the leader of the Proud Boys, standing by, sir, that all of that can be introduced as evidence of seditious conspiracy as those charges go forward in the federal district court in Washington, D.C. Why is that significant? Again, it's an evidentiary ruling. It's a part of the overall case. It's not the entire case, but I identify this as significant because of this. A jury in America is about to be presented in the coming days and weeks with evidence that a sitting president of the United States of America expressly motivated, encouraged, urged, and indeed maybe even incited a white supremacist national organization, those are the Proud Boys, to stand by, to prepare to violently interfere, to overthrow the peaceful transfer of presidential power. That is a significant matter. That is the implicit, if not explicit, finding in this evidentiary ruling coming out of the Federal District Court just this past week. We will certainly continue to monitor that trial, talk more about that in future broadcasts. Recognize as well that there are more Oath Keeper trials also coming up. There are still more trials of a group now approaching 1,000 people for their particular on-site involvement in January 6th. Those prosecutions, those sentencings continue on a regular basis in 2023. And then, of course, as we know, based upon what we've discussed this morning and in other broadcasts, the larger focus on who designed all this, who put it all together. Was the former president himself, the president at that time, responsible for, as Liz Cheney said, lighting the match that caused all this to happen? What about other people, like the former leadership of the Department of Justice, the associate attorney general, who was almost named the attorney general by the former president, a fellow named Jeff Clark? What about people like Rudy Giuliani? What about people like John Eastman, who crafted this overall scheme? Others involved, that the focus plainly of Jack Smith, who's looking at the overall determination of whether or not there are people who are responsible at the highest levels for causing January 6th. We'll continue to monitor that and talk more about all of that as well. And in that connection, in connection with riots at the location of legislative activity, we'll look south for a little while to Brazil. You know well that just this past Sunday, a mob stormed the nation's halls of power, of legislation in Brazil. And just this past week, as a result of that, Brazil's Supreme Court, a different system than the one that we have here, Brazil's Supreme Court says it's going to investigate the former president, Jair Bolsonaro, for inspiring the far-right mob in Brazil that invaded and ransacked that country's Congress just earlier this week. The Supreme Court and presidential offices were also overtaken by that mob. And the decision just yesterday by a Supreme Court justice, his name is Alexandre de Moraes, approved a request from federal prosecutors, again, in Brazil, to include the former president, Jair Bolsonaro, in this expanding investigation into the anti-democratic riots that happened on January 8th. Sounds awfully familiar, doesn't it? Probably inspired by what happened in our country in January 6th, 2 years earlier. But the decision obviously illustrates this very aggressive approach that Brazilian authorities have taken in response to those riots. Quickly arresting about 1,000 rioters there. And beyond this, again, the Supreme Court in a system, again, different than ours, through this Associate Justice, Supreme Court Justice de Moraes, making this finding that the investigation should include any attempts by the former president to stir this up and to cause it in the first place. Very little question probably out there in the public domain that Bolsonaro inspired some about 5,000 people who were at that protest that turned very violent this past Sunday. They carried signs, for example, again, in the public domain that referenced conspiracy theories about Brazil's electronic voting machines. Again, sounds very familiar to what happened here in America, right? Mr. Bolsonaro had long peddled these theories that the election itself was the result of fraud and that his political rivals in that, including the successful president now having taken office, were guilty themselves of fraud. That, however, is similar. It's also different. Bolsonaro's post-election actions contrast those of our former president, Donald Trump. Bolsonaro largely stepped into the shadows since losing the October election. And as you well know from reports, has recently suggested that his followers actually move on. He sent some of those messages. And most recently, He departed for Florida, where he is today, the subject of some inquiries of the State Department about how the former president of Brazil ended up in Florida. Some significant differences in what happened after these riots of just this past Sunday. Bolsonaro somewhat different from Donald Trump. Nonetheless, doing an awful lot of things prior to that time to stir up the tumult, to cause the riots. Now, as here in America, all of that, the focus of an investigation by criminal prosecutors in Brazil about the involvement of the now former President Bolsonaro into events leading up to the tumult of just this past Sunday at the Congress and the other legislative and executive offices there in Brasilia. Continuing to monitor that as well, history being lived in reality, in the moment, both in the United States of America, but also around the world. And finally, as we go into our final moments here and segments here on our morning broadcast, I promise we're going to talk again about the Supreme Court. We spent an awful lot of time, I think appropriately last year, talking about the United States Supreme Court, things on its docket. And we will spend a lot of time probably in May and June talking about some of the major decisions, 10, 12, maybe 15 different decisions the Supreme Court will be issuing on a variety of different issues, including things like the Voting Rights Act, including on the authority of state legislatures to decide voting results, including environmental laws and many, many other issues that we discussed in the past. The Supreme Court has continued to be, in 2023, active on the bench and off the bench as well. Let's talk about at least two, if not three, things that happened just this past week coming out of the Supreme Court docket. We know it continues to entertain oral argument. It's approaching right now about 60 cases overall that it has taken under its wing to review. And it also is making decisions about those cases that it will not review, that it has decided not to grant certiorari, not to ask for the lower court to send the record up, not going to be reviewing those lower court cases. One of those cases comes in the wake of a major case that was decided by the United States Supreme Court last year. This major case having to do with firearms and the Second Amendment in particular. You may recall well that in a case called New York State Rifle and Pistol Association versus Bruin, the High Court last summer struck down New York's prior concealed carry gun law. But a 6-3 majority vote said that the law prevented law-abiding citizens with ordinary self-defense needs, that's the language of the Supreme Court, from exercising their Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms in the public for self-defense. And just days after that ruling, striking down the New York law, the governor of New York, a woman named Kathy Hochul, you've seen her a lot on television and the media generally, convened a special session to pass a new law. This is called the Concealed Carry Improvement Act, and she did that on July 1. The Congress, the legislature there in New York did that on July 1. The New York law, however, again, in the wake of Bruin, came under immediate scrutiny, immediate attack, as gun owners said that it was in direct defiance of the Supreme Court ruling under Bruin and promised that they would take this up on appeal. And sure enough, in the wake of Kathy Hochul's convening this extraordinary legislative session, she said, you know, to combat a gun violence crisis. What happened was that this matter then got appealed, got brought into the district court there, a district court in Syracuse, New York. And a judge named Glenn Sudeby blocked many aspects of the new New York law, 184-page opinion he issued back in November, sort of drew, if you will, in the methodology of Bruin that was decided by the Supreme Court and struck down this new law that Kathy Hochul and the New York legislature had implemented. Said that the new law's good moral character requirement, along with some other disclosures that were called for by the law, including the identification of family members and some social media accounts, all of that, he said, violative of Bruin, violative of the Constitution. Also halted the law's restrictions on carrying guns, among other places, in places of worship, public parks, zoos, buses, theaters, and establishments serving alcohol. So a huge defeat, if you will, in New York for this newly enacted law in the wake of Bruin. Well, what happens after that? A unanimous three-judge panel of the U.S. Court of Appeals in the Second Circuit, that is the circuit court responsible for overseeing district courts in that area, put Judge Sotheby's ruling on hold and said, nope, don't go ahead. Do not stop the implementation of New York's law. A lot of double negatives there. So the Court of Appeals basically reinstitutes the Kathy Hochul and legislative law, permits it to go ahead while the appeal, the substantive appeal, goes forward before the Second Circuit. And then what happened, prompting the news of just this past week? The plaintiffs in this case, again, challenging the new New York law, brought the entire matter to the Supreme Court. And they said in particular that the good moral character requirement of the new law is no less subject, they said in their pleadings, to the unbridled discretion of licensing officials and makes the licensing process even more difficult than it was before. And this ban on guns in sensitive places, they went on to say, encompasses almost the entire state. Designed the allegations in their appeal to the Supreme Court, not as a public safety measure, but rather as a political statement demonstrating New York's contempt for this court's decision in Bruin. Those, again, the allegations made by those people seeking to have the New York law overturned. And so this comes to the Supreme Court. And just this past week, the Supreme Court on Wednesday of this past week, issued a brief unsigned order, no reasons behind it, don't have to do that, that allowed New York to enforce for now this new law placing strict limits on guns outside the home that was enacted, again, in response to this landmark ruling in June under Bruin. So the Supreme Court, a majority of the Supreme Court members say the New York law can continue to be in place, not with any specific statements justifying that. However, even as the Supreme Court permits that to go ahead, their basis, presumably, in this is that at some point, the Court of Appeals, again, the Second Circuit, now reviewing all of this coming out of New York, they will issue a decision. And plainly, the Supreme Court invited, if you will, an appeal of that decision from the lower court to the Supreme Court on the substance of all of this. Basically, the Supreme Court saying this past week, let the lower court decide this, and then we'll take it up after that if you choose to appeal it. Significantly, however, along the way, two justices of the Supreme Court, not surprisingly, Sam Alito and Clarence Thomas. Clarence Thomas was the one who wrote Bruin, said that the law presents novel and serious questions. That is this new New York law, plainly again inviting this appeal, added that the appeals court should address those questions first and should do it promptly. And again, statements made by these two kind of addendums, if you will, to the brief unsigned order saying, we're not giving you any ruling on the substance. We're letting the lower court of appeals decide this case first. And after that, we will take a look at that. And also affirming once again that lower courts generally should take a close look at Bruin and the opinion written by Clarence Thomas for the majority in deciding on the legitimacy of other gun laws out there. Significant statement by the Supreme Court just this past week. We'll hear more about guns down the road from the Supreme Court. And right to the break, a couple of more cases pending in front of the Supreme Court, some action before them just this past week. Stay with us for some reporting on those cases too.
Mental health challenges impact us all in some way. Milwaukee County Behavioral Health Services is working hard to meet these challenges, ushering a new model of mental health care, redesigned with you in mind. This community-based system meets people where they're at, with culturally competent services, better access, and no wrong doors to begin the journey. Milwaukee County Behavioral Health Services, here for you, close to home. If you or someone you know is experiencing a mental health emergency, contact 414-257-7222.
Hey, this is Matt from Design Garden. Remember when the internet was new? Back then you had to leave your house to start a business. Companies used to pay programmers bags of cash to get online. Now, small businesses can get online with a Facebook business page, or Squarespace, or Google My Business, or WordPress. But which tools should you use? Can you afford to go down the wrong path? Design Garden uses modern tools to build your website the right way. Find us online at design.garden. Again, that's design.garden.
It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
Self-monitor your blood pressure in 4 easy-to-remember steps. Self-monitoring is power. Visit managerbp.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council, the American Heart Association, and the American Medical Association, in partnership with the Office of Minority Health and Health Resources and Services Administration.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Highs around 38 this afternoon. Under cloudy skies, southerly winds 10 to 15 miles an hour. Cloudy tonight. Chance for scattered showers. Lows dip down to about 34. Scattered rain showers again tomorrow. Highs around 42. Overcast skies. Upper 30s Tuesday and Wednesday with a chance for scattered showers Tuesday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 27 degrees.
WAUK 540 AM. Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
We are back for our final segment this morning on Morning Cannolis. Always delighted to take your comments and questions. We're talking about many different things this morning, including some state court prosecutions out there as well. We'll get back to those in just a moment or so. But Tom from Cedarburg calling in. Appreciate your comment or question as well. Thanks, Tom.
Hi. I just want to say, Jim, I think you have a great show, and it's really fitting for the times we're living in to hear some accurate information on what's really happening and why it's happening and stuff. I'd also like to say, too, that you have some really good people calling in. And I'd like to point out, especially the gal named Joel, she seemed really articulate and intelligent. I'd like to see someone like that run for office or something and be able to represent us.
Absolutely, Tom. I appreciate your comments about the program. We try to do our best here to be somewhat apolitical, not always successful in doing that, but most importantly, focusing on civics, right? As you just said, talking about what's really going on out there, accurate information. We can disagree, you and I can, and others can, based upon what we should do, but gosh, we've got to have a basic understanding of civics. We've got to have a basic understanding of what did, in fact, happen out there. So appreciate that comment. And yes, concur in your views and also the views of people like Joe and others who've called in, all good folks out there who are giving this some serious thought, being balanced and reasonable and rational. So appreciate that very much. Absolutely. Tom, sure. Thanks for calling in this morning. Appreciate that, Tom. And we'll look forward to more callers down the road, not only in future casts, but also this morning if we still have an opportunity to do just that. I promised at the outset that we would talk about a couple of other matters that have been also in the news this past week. You recall as well that on Christmas Day, some power substations in Washington State were attacked. And specifically, those power stations in Tacoma, Washington, thousands were left without power after some vandals forced their way into four substations, damaged some equipment there, leading to a fire in one instance. 14,000 people over the holidays were left without power from those attacks. Substations owned by the Tacoma Public Utilities and Puget Sound Energy Corporation. Well, just this past week, there were two individuals who were charged with those attacks. Their names are Matthew Greenwood and Jeremy Cahan. They've been charged with conspiracy once again, to damage energy facilities. And Greenwood faces a separate charge of possessing illegal short-barreled rifles. Again, a gun charge related to his attack, along with that of Crahan, on this energy facility. They apparently plotted to knock out power from four different substations. Power in those first two facilities was, in fact, out. The pair then broke into a local business to steal from the cash register. And all of this being provided after Greenwood himself was arrested along with Crahan. Again, the reason why that's significant is not only for what happened in Washington, but this, again, continuing notion that this is now an appropriate thing to do. We know that law enforcement agencies are investigating at least 8 other similar attacks on power stations in 4 states just in this past month alone, including in North Carolina. And we recall well that in the late fall of last year, too. Investigations underway by, again, local authorities, the FBI as well, to address this latest attempt, if you will, to shut down our nation by attacking our power sources. Again, hopefully the deterrent lesson here is you will get arrested, you will get charged, presumably get convicted and sentenced for doing this. Again, an attempt to undermine the very way in which we live in America. Finally, as we go forward here in our last moments, wanted to comment about the fact that we had a major sentencing this past week of Rick Singer. He was the mastermind of this sprawling college admissions scam, known kind of colloquially as Varsity Blues. He was sentenced this past Wednesday to 3.5 years in federal prison. And that was the longest sentence in a case that, of course, has rattled and really disturbed America's education system. He was the central figure, you may recall, in this scam involving wealthy parents who were, if you will, desperate to get their children into some elite universities. Huge sums of money to cheat on standardized tests, bribe university coaches, do other things, including sports falsifications. Singer pled guilty to racketeering conspiracy, money laundering, conspiracy to defraud the U.S., and obstruction of justice way back in March of 2019. He did, in fact, cooperate. He cooperated with the government's investigation in the months prior to the public announcement of the case and in the years since. We know well that that prosecution, that investigation, brought into its ambit quite literally about 50 people who were charged and arrested, including some of those coaches, including some test administrators, including some prominent CEOs of businesses out there, and yes, the actresses Felicity Huffman and Lori Loughman. During his sentencing this past week, the defendant said, "I lost my ethical values and have so much to regret. To be frank, I'm ashamed of myself." Well, probably true of all of the other defendants as well. We've talked a lot about deterrence on this broadcast. Deterrence about other people who engage in this kind of activity, not only to stop them, the individuals like Mr. Singer, William Rick Singer, again, sentenced this past week to 3.5 years, but also those people who engage in academic fraud, and yes, broadly, other kinds of fraud that might be out there. That's the purpose behind prosecution, to stop the individuals and also send the appropriate messages out there about other people who might be thinking about doing the same kind of thing. Finally, in our last moments together here, about 2 minutes or so, wanted to return to an issue that we have talked a lot about, and we're going to be spending a lot of time talking about it in the future weeks here in 2023, and that is the United States Supreme Court. I made reference already to this Moore versus Harper case, this fringe doctrine involving the independent state legislature doctrine, the notion that somehow our legislatures should be the one who make decisions about electoral votes and other things when it comes to voting in America. Well, this coming week, the Supreme Court back in session once again, January 9th, which is Monday, Tuesday the 10th, Wednesday, a number of different cases. On Monday, have a case they're going to be taking oral argument on communications, both legal and non-legal, having to do with the attorney-client privilege, that coming up on Monday. Also on Monday, the Ohio National Guard, it attempted to end a collective bargaining agreement with employees, whether they violated federal law in doing that. That's coming up on Monday. Tuesday, an issue involving the National Labor Relations Act and whether it's preempted, and its access to justice, if you will, is preempted by a state court claim for destroying employers' property in a labor dispute. Finally, on Wednesday, an 11th Amendment case involving the Economic Stability Act in Puerto Rico, having to do with its sovereign immunity, territorial claims there as well. 4 major cases coming up in the Supreme Court in this coming week. We'll be talking about that and more in those future weeks. Join us again every Saturday morning here at Morning Cannolis. Thank you for being with me and with my producer, Calvin. We'll look forward to hearing from you again next Saturday here on the studios of Civic Media. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
This is Pat Greitlow from Up North News Radio. On the air, online, or on demand, make it a point to catch the first word on Wisconsin news, sports, and more weekday mornings from 6 to 8 all across the stations of the Civic Media Radio Network.
I was just curious as to why you called it the Paul Revere Show.
The Paul Revere Show is named this way because the poem that we all know, the famous ride, the poem was written to rally the troops to fight slavery and fight for democracy. And so I named the show the Paul Revere Show because I thought it was the time to get on the air and talk about democracy.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m., always on the Civic Media app.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.